instinctively looked down at the grubby, dirt-covered chalk beneath their feet. "How come they know everything?" said Pepper. "They just have to listen, right?" hazarded Adam. "They just have to sit in their tunnels and listen. You know what hearing teachers have? They can hear a whisper right across the room." "My granny used to put a glass against the wall," said Brian. "She said it was disgusting, the way she could hear everything that went on next door." "And these tunnels go everywhere, do they?" said Pepper, still staring at the ground. "All over the world," said Adam firmly. "Must have took a long time," said Pepper doubtfully. "Remember when we tried to dig that tunnel out in the field? We were at it all afternoon, and you had to scrunch up to get all in." "Yeah, but they've been doing it for millions of years. You can do really good tunnels if you've got millions of years." "I thought the Tibetans were conquered by the Chinese, and the Dalai Lama had to go to India," said Wensleydale without much conviction. Wensleydale read his father's newspaper every evening, but the prosaic everydayness of the world always seemed to melt under the powerhouse of Adam's explanations. "I bet they're down there now," said Adam, ignoring this. "They'd be all over the place by now, sitting underground and listening." They looked at one another. "If we dug down quickly," said Brian. Pepper, who was a lot quicker on the uptake, groaned. "What do you have to go and say that for?" said Adam. "Fat lot of good us trying to surprise them now, isn't it, with you shouting out something like that? I was just thinking we could all dig down, and you just have to go and warn them." "I don't think they'd dig all those tunnels," said Wensleydale doggedly. "That doesn't make any sense. Tibet's hundreds of miles away." "Oh, yes, oh, yes, and I suppose you know more about it than Madame Blatvartatatsky," sniffed Adam. "Now, if I was a Tibetan," said Wensleydale, in a reasonable tone of voice, "I'd just dig straight down to the hollow bit in the middle and then run around the inside and dig straight up where I wanted to be." They gave this due consideration. "You've got to admit, that's more sensible than tunnels," said Pepper. "Yes, well, I expect that's what they do," said Adam. "They'd be bound to have thought of something as simple as that." Brian stared dreamily at the sky while his finger probed the contents of one ear. "Funny, really," he said. "You spend your whole life going to school and learning stuff, and they never tell you about stuff like Bermuda Triangle and UFOs and all these old masters running around the inside of the Earth. Why do we have to learn boring stuff when there's all this brilliant stuff we could be learning? That's what I want to know." There was a chorus of agreement. Then they went out and played Charles Fort and the Atlanteans versus the ancient masters of Tibet. But the Tibetans claimed that using mystic ancient lasers was cheating. There was a time when witch-finders were respected, although it didn't last very long. Matthew Hopkins, for example, the witch-finder general, found witches all over the east of England in the middle of the 17th century, charging each town and village 9 pence a witch for everyone he discovered. That was the trouble. Witch-finders didn't get paid by the hour. Any witch-finder who spent a week examining the local crones and then told the mayor, "Well done, not a pointy hat among a lot of them," would get fulsome thanks, a bowl of soup, and a meaningful goodbye. So, in order to turn a profit, Hopkins had to find a remarkable number of witches. This made him more than a little unpopular with village councils, and he was himself hanged as a witch by an East Anglian village who had sensibly realised that they could cut their overheads by eliminating the middleman. It is thought by many that Hopkins was the last witch-finder general. In this they would, strictly speaking, be correct. Possibly not in the way they imagine, however. The witch-finder army marched on, just slightly more quietly. There is no longer a real witch-finder general, nor is there a witch-finder colonel, a witch-finder major, a witch-finder captain, or even a witch-finder lieutenant. The last one was killed falling out of a very tall tree in Caterham in 1933 while attempting to get a better view of something he believed was a satanic orgy of the most degenerate persuasion, but was in fact the Caterham and White Leaf Market Traders Association annual dinner and dance. There is, however, a witch-finder sergeant. There is now also a witch-finder private. His name is Newton Pulsifer. It was the advertisement that got him in the Gazette between a fridge for sale and a litter of not exactly Dalmatians. "Join the professionals. Part-time assistant required to combat the forces of darkness. Uniform, basic training provided, field promotion certain, be a man." In his lunch hour, he phoned the number at the bottom of the ad. A woman answered.
Hello, he began tentatively. "I saw your advert." "Which one, love?" "The one in the paper." "All right,